بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، الرحمن الرحيم، مالك يوم الدين، إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين، اهدنا الصراط المستقيم، صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين. صدق الله العلي العظيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Alhamdulillah, we have the opportunity to have our honorable guest tonight again. And Rabbi Weiss is not a stranger to our community now. So he is one of the leaders of the Naturai Karta International Organization of Jews Against the Zionists, against Israel. And he has been very active in spreading the word of Haq and truth against the zulm and atrocities of Israel and against the innocent civilians, the Zionists, who are not only doing oppression and zulm against Islam and Muslims, but they are also victimizing the Jewish community and the Christian community. And he has been traveling all over the world. He participated in the Holocaust conference in Tehran. President Ahmadinejad invited him to the conference, and he has been traveling to Gaza. He was supposed to be in the Freedom Flotilla, which was attacked, and he was also supposed to be in Gaza on this Yom Al-Quds, this last Friday that passed away, but it didn't work. It was not the will of Allah. So we have him here, Alhamdulillah. So please welcome him and recite a loud salawat.
With the help of the Almighty, I again appeal to the Almighty to bestow upon me His truth, His wisdom, that I should be worthy of conveying His truth, His wisdom to this special gathering, to this distinguished group gathering here, and that we should be able to know His truth and convey it to the world. With God's help, inshallah, we should be able to accomplish the changing. There's young people here, people who have a promising futures with the help of the Almighty. Not only young people, but the young people especially have the opportunity to forge and to become leaders, leaders of the United States, leaders around the world, that we should be able to change. And this, what the world portrays as what is justice and what is righteous, and to bring the true righteousness, godly righteousness, to this world, that we should be able to bring God's, one of God's attributes is shalom and salam, peace, and the uniform that the world should recognize the one God, we should be able to serve Him. Amen. So I'm very, this is my prayer to the Almighty. At the same time, I'm again thankful, so thankful to this, it's called Zainab organization. And of course, to my dear friend, so many, Lana Saeed, so such a good friend, that from so many years, God should give strength and protection to be able to serve Him, to be able to convey and teach to this community around the world that the as He's doing now with Zionism, the truth of the Almighty, and bringing peace, as we say, God's attributes. I'm very thankful, and I'm thankful again for all of you who are coming here tonight. As I said, sometimes you have an imam or a mulana or something, or a sheikh comes, and then so it's interesting. It's what you are studying, what of your religion. But when somebody comes, and not only from a different religion, but from somebody who is, unfortunately, it's a people who has been portrayed and regularly been, the world thinks that we're enemies, and to give time to be able to listen, this comes most probably from the teaching and from Mulana here, and from most probably your teaching around the world. I gather, with God's help, that this is all false, that the portrayal and this concept that we are mistrust each other, that we're enemies, is totally false. So you're coming here, I'm very thankful, I'm humbled that you're here, and God give you strength to be able to do His will. Thank you very much. And again, it's like I said, really, in truth, this is really one of the most pivotal, the important issues that we should know today. The fact of the matter is, like I started saying yesterday, the world has a whole different perspective about many issues. And I had the privilege of privately speaking with Mulana yesterday, Saeed, and there's so many different things that are happening on the world, and things that they vilify what is good, and what is evil is made into victims, and on the contrary, righteous. How many innocent people have died in the last few years because of attacks and from countries and different issues, and simply because it was the media and some political leaders decided that this is what is evil, and so on. You all know around the world what's happening, unfortunately, especially in the Middle Eastern countries, how many people have suffered, and not only in the last few years, but for many, many years. This is all because the world, as a generality, accepts a falsehood. Because if the world, the public, what they call the silent majority around the world, if they understand something is terrible, something is wrong, they wouldn't accept it. So the way, in order, I said yesterday, the Shatan, the Satan, we say the Satan in Hebrew, in order that they should be able to get the world to back of something, when the people want to do a hideous crime or whatever, it's dressed in righteousness. And that has to do with individual people. We have a saying in our in the Jewish tradition, in the Jewish teachings, in the Jewish Torah, they said two things I don't want. One type is called a sin, a crime in Hebrew, in a Jewish crime, you know, to God a sin, we say avera. And the other is a mitzvah, a good deed. There's two things we don't want, not this avera, not this mitzvah. I don't want to do the mitzvah, but people say, oh, it's a mitzvah, it's a good deed to destroy that person. It's really, because this person is terrible, it's a good deed to destroy him. You're doing God's will. That type of commandment, that mitzvah, I don't want. And I don't want to have it says an avera, it's a sin to support and help this person. He's a poor person, but him don't support, it's an avera. This sin and this good deed I don't want. And it's, I mean, of course, it's just a saying that sometimes that if somebody is doing evil, you don't want to support them, but it's just a generality. A lot of times when somebody doesn't want to do a good deed, so they come around asking to collect for charity, and they say, "Ah!" Instead of saying, "I just don't want to give my money away," since they start in, that you should feel comfortable, you start thinking, "Oh well, really, they don't need the money, and this and that." And you start making so you should be able to go to sleep at night because everybody really has a good heart, and they were brought up to do good. So in order that they should not do a good deed and be able to go to sleep knowing that somebody else doesn't have food, so they'll have to work it out in their minds that really that person shouldn't be helped. He's lazy. He should be going out and working. He should be doing things, you know, so etc. And the same thing is when to do a sin. Oh, it would be a good deed to destroy that person. A lot of times it's because you have your personal interests and it has nothing to do with the truth of God. It has to do with what one wants to do for their own selfish interest. Doesn't mean selfish. Personally, it could be selfish. Other reasons, it's a group or whatever, this group is not. And in truth, a person has to be very, very careful that his own personal feelings should not go in the way of what God's will is. And the same thing, of course, in a colossal manner, we find in the world that many of countries, their own personal interests drove them to destroy and kill millions and millions of people who are murdered simply because of self-interest. And of course, it's always dressed in the will of God and righteousness. Unfortunately, almost always, that is the route taken by the Satan. And we find this is invariably. I mean, in my lifetime, you find this, and you start going, and you start getting to know the other side of the coin. You go to the other countries. Like I remember years ago, around when is it? By September 11th, that was 11 years ago or something like that. We went to South Africa. There was the first meeting in Durban that was held against racism, a conference against racism and xenophobia. The United Nations made this in South Africa, in Durban, South Africa. It was very famous. In fact, this September they're going to have it a third time in New York. The first time was a very successful meeting because at that time they didn't control it. The last they had a second Durban in Geneva, and that was already a whole different story because they saw what happened. In the first Durban in South Africa, people came from every country and they brought the terrible crimes, because it was supposed to be everybody from all the different countries bringing the problems of that country and racism and xenophobia and so forth, and they brought from every country. It was an eye opening, and it was tragic, it was terrible, but you heard from all these different countries how people are being oppressed, people are being, simply because either they're a different color, they're a different religion, they're something different, and they're oppressed, murdered and oppressed, and they're just terrible, terrible. You saw this around the world, and in every case, we were in the United States, have heard a whole different story about each issue. We heard, oh, the reason why these people are suffering is because they were doing this crime and these people are doing that crime. And you, all of a sudden, you go to a place that was totally out of, that have no interest in the whole issue, and you have people coming, and all of a sudden, you heard a whole different story about all these suffering. So like I say, this is certainly true when we come to the Union of Zionism. Again, I think that the world and in America, and people have a basic goodness in them, and they want to do, and as you've seen, as I was saying yesterday, they have people do for human rights and so many different issues. If it was with the Katrina, afterwards it wasn't, people weren't helped soon enough, so immediately people started demanded an accounting. How come it took so long, or so many weeks? It should have been much shorter. The same thing in Haiti, and then the same thing in other countries. Whenever, even if it's not only if people are not being helped, but even if they're being helped and they're not being helped immediately, then the people demand an accounting. Now let's just look what's happening in Palestine, in occupied Palestine. Occupied Palestine is occupied for well over 60 years already. And it's, if somebody who's not, who doesn't have their self-interest in this issue, you look at what happened. A people were thrown out of their homes, out of their cities, out of their towns. Many towns, there's a listing of how many towns there were that they were totally obliterated. They don't exist anymore. They're living in refugee camps in around, spread out around countries in the area and spread out around the world. And then you have people in Gaza and Palestine proper. Gaza is also part of Palestine there. And you're having, they're living in squalor. The situation is terrible. They don't have enough water and so forth. And this is well over 60 years, in a time when everybody could see immediately. You take your cell phone and you can show what's happening in Gaza on the moment. And yet, all these human rights activists who demand an accounting for being one day late in sending aid seems not to see what's happening in Gaza. They don't see what's happening in Palestine. And on the contrary, what they do is there's a tremendous support for the state of Israel, the illegitimate state of Israel. There's a tremendous support and a sympathy. And it's so there is a reason for this. Of course, like I keep on saying, there's a reason. The reason behind it is pure evil. It's the Satan. But in reality, the fact is that it's always dressed in some type of a moralization of the issue, that it is proper. And in other words, that people should say, they don't say, I'm preparing to do an evil. They think they're doing right. And what is the issue here? The issue is clearly because the underlying issue in the eyes of people is that this is religious intolerance, that it is Muslims who hate, as a general rule, Arabs, and especially Muslims who do not accept a people of another religion. And that is a fact. And also, you in the United States see that in your daily life, that maybe not with Jewish people, but simply you see that people look at the Muslim people automatically. The first impression is that, most probably you don't accept the rest of the United States who are Christians. Most probably. Yes, if you prove yourself as an individual, maybe we'll believe you. But as a general rule, that's the accepted, I would think, the impression around the United States and the whole West, that the Muslim people don't accept and are not hospitable to other people. And that's very ironic and that's very sad, because as we were saying yesterday, the fact of the matter is that the Jewish people are supposed to be the arch enemies and the ones that the Muslim and the Arab people hate the worst. The Jewish people found a safe haven and lived and flourished all the years. In which countries did they go to? In the Muslim countries. Where did the greatest oppression for the Jewish people happen? In countries that proclaim themselves as Christian. The pogroms, as a general rule, pogroms means that they would attack the masses, would get incited by the priest. And they would go and they would, with clubs and sticks, and they would murder Jews in many, many Russian towns and many Russian cities. And that's how America became populated before the Second World, because of these terrible pogroms. There was also hunger, famines in places, but there was a general rule, there were pogroms. The priest would get up there and start saying, people are dying because of the plague. I don't even know if you know, there was a black plague, and there were times by the first, over 100 years ago, around 100 years ago, a little less than 100 years ago also, there was a plague, and people were dying. And the Jewish people, not all of them died as a lot less. And you know why they died a lot less? Let me tell you a very interesting reason. Because we are very careful before we pray and so forth, before everything, before we touch food and everything, we have to wash our hands constantly. And we have to keep ourselves pure, not only spiritually pure, but part of the spiritually pureness is to keep ourselves clean. And the people were catching the black plague. They didn't know in those days. They didn't have microscopes and all these things. They were getting contaminated. They were eating poisoned water. The water was contaminated, and they were dying like fleas. While the Jews died a lot less, because they were very careful. They're always washing their hands, and they have to wipe before we eat everything. So they you're not allowed to have dirt on your hands and so on. And so they said, hey, it's a conspiracy of the Jews. So besides how many people unfortunately died of these plagues, but then they attacked Jewish communities, that it's some type of a plan, a conspiracy of the Jews, that they're killing the other people. I could go on and on and on, things like that. We use a very famous pogrom, pogroms are famous, a libel, it's called the blood libel, that the Jews use for Passover, the Christian blood. It is the most repugnant and false thing that could be possible. Anybody who studies Jewish our law, our Torah, knows that our matzos that we use for Passover is has to be watched from when the wheat grows. It's wheat and water, and that is what makes this what's called matzah. It's a flat bread. It's not allowed to be leavened. And we have to watch it that nothing touches it, nothing whatsoever. It's not sold, anything, and it's a cost of fortune. A box of matzahs today costs $20, and it's like a pound. It's unbelievable how expensive, because we watch the wheat that as soon as it gets ripe, it's cut from the field, and nothing is allowed to go near it. If anything, it gets touched with any whatever, it's not able to be used. And blood, it says in the Torah, that we're not allowed to use blood. We have to salt meat after we slaughter it, after it's called shechita, after it's slaughtered. Then we have to salt it in the whole system to take out all the blood. We're not allowed to eat blood. And yet the Jews are accused of using Christian blood. So, I mean, it's just a repugnant, totally false claim. There's a book called the Elders of Zion, there's a word before, there's something, the Elders of Zion, and that supposedly that there's a conspiracy, a cabal of the rabbis, that they want to take over the world. All these things have, not only they don't have a basis in Judaism, but it's on the contrary. We're not to be involved in politics. We're not, that doesn't mean that there's not Jewish people who are not involved in politics, but the concept that the Jews want to take over the political, to take over the world, that is totally forbidden by us. It says on and on and on. Yet the Jews throughout history were accused constantly of these terrible crimes, and they were murdered. People would go out in the streets in Russia, in Ukraine, in Poland, and on and on and on. And even in England, they were banned. There's a city called York in England. I was just there. I brought my children there that they should see. There's a city called York. New York is named after York in England. York is a very old city, and hundreds of years ago the Jews lived there, and the people gathered one day, they decided they're going to murder the Jews unless they convert to Christianity. And the Jews had paid like a tax to the head of whatever, I don't know, the ruler there, in the area, and he had a big castle. And I used to carry the picture out with me. I don't think I have it now. It's a very interesting, it's a circle. It goes up exactly like a real perfect circle, and it goes up on a mound. Very high up is this castle, and all the Jews ran there for protection, but they were surrounded by the masses, and they threatened they're gonna burn them, they're gonna kill them. And they took a few people out. They were able, and they weren't protected by the leadership there, and these Jews, they slaughtered themselves because they were being tortured. Some were tortured, and they were afraid that they're going to be tortured, and then the people are going to drop their religion. Instead of dropping their religion, they slaughtered their own children, and they slaughtered themselves. And there's a big sign. It's like this, almost as big as this table, square, right on the bottom of the hill in York. It says that here the Jews and Jewesses, that's the way they wrote it, gave their lives, because, whatever, something like that, for their religion. And it's many hours away from London. It's in England. I took my children there because I wanted to show them what it means that you have to give your life for the Almighty, to be observant of your Torah. But this is what happened. These were Christians, and they went and they cook. And I'm not condemning all Christians. I'm just saying this didn't happen. And not, I never said, I'm not saying that there was never any bumps in the road, but this is a generality that was continuing for hundreds and hundreds of years. And then they were banned from England. They were banned from many different lands in Europe. Where did the Jews go throughout all this history? They went to Muslim lands. And in Muslim lands, they were graciously accepted. They flourished as religious Jews, that everybody saw their Jews. It wasn't that they hid their religion. And they were able to serve God. And so we're talking about Muslim communities that were very clearly Muslim countries, that the people were practicing Muslims. And they had nothing to fear of. They didn't have to be afraid that they're going to have to report, or they're going to take in front of the United Nations or human rights groups. They could have done what they wanted to the Jews, and they didn't murder them. While the Christian countries, this is what happened, that they were slaughtered many times. So this is clear that this is nothing to do, this is not a religious issue that is creating this terrible rift and this terrible problem today. And this is clear that the Muslim communities accepted not only the Christians but the Jews. And yet, you come to the United States, you come to the Western Europe, and constantly you have this problem of being accepted. The reason, because there could be a lot of reasons, of course, but one of them, we feel that a lot has to do with the fact that Zionism had for over 60 years been busy portraying to the world the fact that in Palestine that they can't have the state, it's because the people hate them because they're Jews. Also, trying to bring in the issue of the Holocaust. That because of the Holocaust, you see the Holocaust, the Nazis simply slaughtered the Jews because they were Jewish. That was clear. They said so. They wanted to murder the Jews because they're Jewish. And they tried to equate, they're busy with the Holocaust, they're trying to use that issue and trying to really bring this, call it a guilt ride, that the ones who oppose their existence of the State of Israel, it's because they're just a continuation of the Nazis. So they keep on using this concept of religion, that this is what the problem is. And this is for over 60 years, this is ongoing. And there was nobody who was there to refute them. For some odd reason, the works of Satan, the ones who were very rich, Arab leaders and Muslim leaders, didn't use the opportunity to put advertisements in the New York Times. They could have. They could have put every year. In fact, we have a book. Last time I brought a very fat book, but it was too heavy for me to carry. We have every year we put in an article in the New York Times when the Israelis make the Israeli Independence Day. We put in an article, clarifying that they don't represent Judaism, and what I'm saying that it has nothing to do with the religious concept and so forth. The first years when we did this, like 40 years ago, when we started putting it in the New York Times, they didn't want to put it in, and they edited it. They didn't want it to go in as it was. We had to fight. You have no idea how we had to fight till we finally broke through this, that they had to put this article in. And we do this every single year. It's a fortune, I mean, for us. You know, we're talking about a price like each article, for here, we're talking about $50,000 for a quarter of a page. I don't remember exactly what the price is. I'm not involved in it now in doing this. But it costs a fortune. But thank God, I mean, many of the Arab leaders could easily afford to put in articles. They do it for advertisements for any clothing or any type of for oil company or whatever. They're willing to do. Why couldn't they put in these articles for well over 60 years saying that, hey, why are we portrayed as people who do not accept other people? The fact is, the Jews, they lived in this country and that country, writing the exact history of Jews living in all their countries. They could have easily done that. Instead, they didn't do it. It was ignored. And I'm not here trying to vilify the Arab countries and saying it's because of them the people of Palestine are suffering. Unfortunately, it's because of the Zionists. But, you know, I'm saying that nothing was really done to stop that. If I was, again, speaking to Mulana about the different... Zionism worked on this. The Satan is very efficient. They put bombs in Iraq in synagogues. And the book was written about this. His name is Galadi. He lives in Manhattan, if he's still alive. A few years ago, we went with a video and recorded him. He wrote a book called Ben-Gurion Scandals about this. Mulana was again showing me in his telephone. They were speaking about the different Zionist conspiracies. And one day he mentioned when I showed with the Liberty, the ship of the Liberty, maybe people know the history, that it was a United States ship. It was most probably a spy ship in the Mediterranean, and they were most probably spying on what Israel was doing. And Israel came and boom, they bombed the whole ship and they destroyed it. Nobody said a word. It was an American ship. They came, oh, we thought it was an Egyptian ship or something. And American soldiers were murdered and nothing happened. Nobody was vilified. In fact, on the contrary, the people of the Liberty who tried to speak up, they suffered. But there's something even more than that. There's somebody, and this is an article from Haaretz, again, Israeli paper. This is 08, so it's only 3 years ago. And the article says, Binyamin Gibli, the head of military intelligence, died yesterday at the age of 89. This was Friday, August 22nd, 08. And it says, Gibli was one of the masterminds behind the operation called the Lavan Affair. Lavan Affair. What was the Lavan Affair? The operation aimed at swaying Western governments into more favorable stance towards Israel. According to the plan, operatives would carry out attacks on Western targets in Egypt, in order to ruin ties with Cairo. In other words, they would put bombs and things like that. They would attack Western things. So it would look like the Egyptians did it. So it's those bad Arabs, those bad Muslims, always the same. And what happened was they were caught, it was revealed, and the whole thing fell apart. And this is just an example of an ongoing what they did. This was what they tried to do to me, but they also put bombs in synagogues. They were caught. This guy wrote a book called Ben-Gurion Scandals, and he wasn't a Zionist, and he was a young boy, a teenager, and unfortunately the way it works is that youth always think they're smarter than their parents, and they always come up with these new things. So the Zionism was a new movement in the 50s and so forth. So he said, wow, you know, it's great to become a Zionist. He was a rebellious youth, and his father begged him. He told me this, we recorded it. He said, my father begged me. He said, don't join this group. And he joined. And he joined this group where they put bombs. They were caught in Iraq putting bombs in synagogues. They were arrested. They were caught. He wasn't caught. I don't know. He escaped and he wasn't caught. And he went to Israel. And later he became totally disenchanted with it. He was very disappointed what Zionism is about. So he later wrote a book called Ben-Gurion Scandals. I asked him, how was your life in Iraq prior to this whole thing that you became a Zionist as a boy? What do you remember? He said, oh, what should I tell you? He said, the rabbi would go on the street, and as customary, as a show of respect, the children would kiss his, the corner of the clothing. So the imam, the sheikh, whatever, they would also do that. That was a sign of respect. He said, we have, and they lived together in total peace. He said, we have a holiday called Sukkah, tabernacle, Sukkah, it's called. Once a year, maybe you've seen it. I mean, here it's not, like if you come to New York, you see it almost every porch. I mean, many porches, not every porch. I mean, a lot in the Jewish area, you see it on every porch. We're required for a week to move out of our houses, basically, and make a little hut that's opened on top, just with slats, wooden slats or something like that, from trees, branches, to remind us of how we went in Egypt. And that's required, and we make it beautiful. We hang beautiful pictures, fruits. It's customary to hang fruits and nice, very beautiful things there. And so he said the Arab neighbors would come and hang fruits there, that it should be blessed. That through the year they would use it would be hanging in the sukkah. We do hang things also like that, oil and things that remains for a long time. So it's like blessed from this because it's an aura of holiness. He's just giving an example how they lived together in peace. Yet he became a Zionist, mind you. He became a Zionist, and this is what they were doing. So what is the accomplishment of this? The accomplishment is twofold. They vilify in for over 60 years in the eyes of the world what the Arab and the Muslim people are, and nobody refuted this. Look at the papers. Look at the New York Times. Look at years and years and years. See if you find articles from any Arab country saying, this is not true. We were living together. You don't see anything. Never. And the fact is that they were living in harmony and growing. But the Zionists just like an unending propaganda in all the papers, year after year after year, that they mistreat other people. So, of course, when the last few years, when you come to America, what did you expect? They're going to come here and say, welcome, everybody, you're welcome here. This is what, and again, I'm not condoning any of what's happening, but it comes from, psychologically, people are afraid because they've been portrayed, the Muslims, they want to destroy everybody that's not Muslim. So this is a terrible tragedy, and it has a lot to do with this Zionism. Now, the Jewish people, and again, I'm not condoning in any manner why they're not supporting the Palestinian people. But the mindset, the ones who were not religious, they were easily conned into believing that Zionism is Judaism. But the religious, there are many religious who unfortunately joined the bandwagon of Zionists. Now again, we believe the vast majority of the very religious, certainly, and of the religious don't support this Zionism. But the ones who do, a lot has to do with not that they're supporting Zionism, but they've been brought... They've been bred and taught that the Arabs, they come from Europe, many people here come from Europe, and they believe that the Arabs want to kill every Jew. So this is fear-mongering. And just in case you don't think it's true, they put bombs, these bombs were placed in synagogues in Argentina, they killed them, I don't know how many people, and very questionable, they claim Iran did it, but whether Iran did it or didn't do it, I can tell you one thing, that the only one who really would gain from this, who benefited from that bomb was the enemies of Iran. And why? And the Zionists. Why? For very simple reason. Iran was working with Argentina for a nuclear plant or something. The second after this bomb, all the ties were cut off. Until today, they don't have an official embassy in Argentina. I went there. I met with the Iranian representative, and he was complaining. He said, "Show, prove it. You know, clearly." He said, "Just we're asking for proof, 100%." The Zionists, what they do is they create in a country a fear of the people, you know, that the people should say, "Oh, we need the state of Israel because we need a place to run to." Look what happened by Hitler. Hitler, the Jews were murdered. Why? Because they didn't have a home. So we have to run to it. This is all propaganda, Zionist working on the minds, fear-mongering, creating a fear. So there's the religious Jews who support Zionism. A lot of times, it's not they're supporting Zionism. They say the Shas Party or something like that. The Shas Party, which is, by us, again, a repugnant party and things, it's a political, it's disgusting, it's just a bunch of gangsters who are running the thing. But the followers, a lot of them are religious Jews, and they don't celebrate Israel in any manner. They don't send their children to the army, and yet they're fearful of returning land. Why? Because the Arabs are going to come in and they're going to kill every Jew. This is the mindset. This is, of course, like I said, repugnant. The fact of the matter is, we've been living together for hundreds and hundreds of years under Muslim rule. The time doesn't allow, and it's such a pity. There's so much to look like. I have. We recorded in Yemen just recently. A rabbi went to Yemen to officiate in a wedding. A student, because some of the students come here to learn in our schools, and he went there, and a sheikh said, "You must come to my house to eat." So he said, "I can't, it's not kosher, I can't, you know, I have to eat spirit." He said, "But you must come, just come to visit me." He came into the house, and he insisted. He just met him on the street. He met him, and he came, the guy prepared tables of food. He said, "I told you I can't eat." He said, "I don't care, I prepared," he said. And he said, "Why did I prepare it?" He said, "I want you to know that the Jews lived in my town. They lived, my father was a sheikh," he said, "and they lived here." And this was in the 50s. And he said, and some guys came from the Zionist organization from Palestine, and they said, "We're willing to pay you." They came with a whole pack of money. "We're going to pay you. Throw out the Jews." And his father said, "God forbid, I'm not going to throw out. They're living here thousands of years. I'm going to do that." So it ended with that. He said, within a few weeks or something, two Jews were stabbed to death. Now, who did it? Who did it? Everybody became, the Jews panicked, they thought they're being stabbed by the Arabs, because that's who else did it, and they ran away, and that's what they were able to get them, the Jews, they got them to go up to Palestine. This is, like I'm saying, this is the on and on and on, we could go with stories like this. Zionism cultivates this animosity, this hate. It's built, it's predicated, it's built, and the whole thing on evil. Evil and falsehood. The whole concept, as I was explaining, of what Zionism is not Judaism. Zionism is contradictory to Judaism. Judaism is subservience to God. One thing and one thing only, that we stood on Mount Sinai and we said to God, it says in the Torah, Na'aseh v'nishma, we will listen, we will do and we will listen. Whatever you say, blindly, we're going to follow you, we say to the Almighty. And that is what it means to be a Jew. Zionism says, where is God to protect us? That's what they say. Where is God to protect us? We don't see, he wasn't there by the Holocaust. Where was it? We have to have a national home. We have to have a gun. Never again. You've heard the expression, never again, maybe, from the Zionists. This is never again. And we're going to protect ourselves. It's built and predicated on blasphemy, saying that God isn't to protect us, and we have to protect ourselves. Most of them don't even believe in God. But I shouldn't say most of them. A lot of them don't believe in God. Most of them don't practice the religion, at least. If they believe in God, questionable, but they don't practice the religion. It's built on blasphemy. It's built on totally excluding God from the equation. That the concept is pure nationalism. Being that they don't use God, they don't have a problem with anything, any moral issue. So in other words, to be a hypocrite, or to say they're going to use a Star of David, even though David wrote the Psalms, there was a holy man, it's not a problem by them. Because you have a problem because he says that you're not allowed to lie, you're not allowed to steal, you're not allowed to kill. But if God is out of the equation, you can do what you want. Then homosexuality is okay, and they'll march in, like they just did a few weeks ago. They had a homosexual march right in the center of Jerusalem. And why? They could have gone anywhere else. No, it has to be right there. And they say, oh, these disgusting Orthodox Jews who don't want to have this march, they don't accept other people. They don't say for one second, why do you have to go to the center of Jerusalem to make your march? There's not enough streets in Tel Aviv. Why do you have to go there? They're trying to eradicate God from everything. They misconstrue, they twist everything about what Judaism is. When it came to the Holocaust, the concept of the Holocaust, how it's unbelievable, it's hair-raising, that they worked with the Nazis. And again, I was just showing to Milana, you can see on NKUSA on our site, and I left the book with has all this information. It's a book called The Holocaust Victims Accused. And this is just a compilation of different things that happened. One of the comments was that the Zionists accused Great Britain, which they accused many countries, but they accused Great Britain of being complicit in the killing of Jews. In other words, all the countries were silent. Jews were being murdered. Millions of Jews were murdered. And again, I always say to make the Zionists' teeth grit, for them it's unfortunate. For me, it's also unfortunate. But my grandparents were killed in the Holocaust, so they can't accuse me. You know, they accuse us of not being Jewish. We are Jewish, thank God. We're very religious Jews. Our communities are very religious, and we're against Zionism. And they can't say that we don't know what the Holocaust is because we personally suffered from the Holocaust. Like I say, my grandparents died in Auschwitz, as many other relatives. And so I want to make a comment. They said they accused, and I'm quoting here. This is the book, The Holocaust Victims Accused. In the Times of London of June 6, 1961, Rabbi Dr. Solomon Schoenfeld, who served in the period of the Holocaust as the chairman of the Rescue Committee, founded by the chief rabbi of Britain, so this is official, he wrote a letter to the editor, which set off a storm amongst the British Zionists. He wrote, and I'm quoting, "Your recent reports of the Eichmann trial," Eichmann was the one who was tried in the Nuremberg trials for the Nazi crimes, and he was accused of being the leader of the gas chambers and all that, and he was eventually they killed him there. And he admitted, by the way, Eichmann, it was very clear, I mean, there was no question that that's what he did. But anyway, now quoting again, "Your recent reports of the Eichmann trial includes considerable evidence tending to show that His Majesty's government, the government of Great Britain, was largely indifferent and unwilling to take action in defense of the European Jews who were being massacred daily by the Nazis. And that was in spite of the efforts by the Zionist leaders to persuade the British Foreign Office to rouse itself into action on behalf of the victims." In other words, the Zionists accused Great Britain of being complacent, not helping the Jews. And he writes, "My experience in 1942 and 43 was wholly in favor of British readiness to help openly, constructively, and totally. And this readiness to help the Jews met with opposition from Zionist leaders who insisted on rescue to Palestine as the only acceptable form of help." In other words, you want to save the Jews? We're not interested. You want to send them to Palestine, the Jews? We're here. Then you can do it. But if you want to save the Jews from being murdered, and it's not to go to Palestine, let them die. And he writes, in they had a meeting, I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but he wrote, a declaration was read to both houses of parliament on December 17th, 1942, in consultation with the Dominion Government of India to declare its readiness to find temporary refuge in its own territories and territories under its control for endangered persons. As a result of wide concern, there was a total of 277 parliamentary signatories of this, of all parties. Again, I'm leaving out lines, but you can read it. It's available at the parliamentary meeting held on January 27, 1943, right in the middle when Jews were being murdered. The next steps were being energetically pursued by over 100 MPs, those are members of parliament, and lords. A spokesman for the Zionists announced that the Jews would oppose the motion of saving these Jews on the grounds of its omitting to refer to Palestine. Some voices were raised in support of the Zionist view. There was considerable debate, and thereafter the motion was dead. Even the promoters exclaimed in desperation, "If the Jews cannot agree amongst themselves, how can we help?" You see this, and you see what I spoke of you last night, two nights ago when I spoke here, and we mentioned what Chaim Weizmann said. He said that the Jews, the millions of Jews, are dust on the wheels of history, because he only wanted the cultured Jews to go to Palestine. When you see this, then you say these guys are criminals. They should be taken to the Nuremberg trials. Why weren't they tried in the Nuremberg trials? And that's a good question. Do you know that there's a book called Perfidy I was mentioning from Benhech, where it shows that the Jews, the Nazis went from country to country. In 1944 they went to Hungary, and they were ready to invade Hungary, and they did eventually invade Hungary. There was one of the great rabbis there, was the Rabbi Unger. He was of the town called Nitra, and he had a son-in-law who was also a brilliant rabbi. His name was Rabbi Weiss Mandel, of blessed memory. And this Rabbi Weiss Mandel was brilliant, and he went secretly to Eichmann's henchmen, and he said, "Look, you're the end. You see it being murdered. It's going to come soon. The end of the war. The Nazis are going to lose. You need money. Sell me the Jews. Don't murder the Jews. Sell me the Jews." And they agreed. And they stopped killing Jews. It's in there. They were very exacting in their recording everything that happened in Auschwitz. They stopped killing Jews for around 2 months, and this is recorded. And it was giving the time for the Jews to come up with this vast amount of money that they required. So Rabbi Weiss Mandel told his father-in-law about this, Rabbi Unger, and Rabbi Unger said to him, "Don't go to the Zionist organizations." But he went. He went because they were very rich, the Zionist organizations. So he went to them and said, "I need a massive amount of money." He said, "Sure, we'll help you." Behind his back, like I said yesterday, they saw that the people that were involved were arrested, that they shouldn't be saved, because they didn't want these people. But they had two reasons why the Jews should not be saved. One was, it said, "Rak b'dam tiyulanu ha'aretz." I'm quoting Greenbaum, one of the heads of Zionism. I have it in this book also. They said, the more blood, Jewish blood that's spilled, the victors divide the spoils. In other words, who's going to win the war? It's going to be America, England, and they're going to see the Jews die, so many Jews, that they're going to give them a piece of land. So the more Jews that die, the more land we'll get. "Rak b'dam," only with blood, "tiyulanu ha'aretz," will be for us the land. Also, they didn't want these religious Jews. As Chaim Weizmann, I quoted it yesterday, Palestine, Chaim Weizmann said, Palestine cannot absorb the Jews of Europe. We want only the best of Jewish youth to come to us. We want only the educated to enter Palestine for the purpose of increasing its culture. The other Jews will have to face whatever fate awaits them. These millions of Jews are dust on the wheels of history, may have to be blown away. We don't want them pouring into Palestine. We don't want Tel Aviv to become another low-grade ghetto. So in other words, they despise Jews like me. So all the Hungarian Jews, I could thank the Zionists for the murder. I mean, of course, the Nazis carried out, but I could thank the Zionists for thwarting the efforts of saving my grandparents and all the millions, the close to a million Jews of Hungary. There was close to a million Jews in Hungary, 750,000 Jews. And they have to be thanked, because they could have been saved if it wouldn't be for the Zionists. Yet the Zionists have the audacity of making a Yad Vashem, a memorial here and a memorial there. And I'm sure in Seattle you have a memorial for the Holocaust. And who's running it? You'll see plenty of Israeli flags. They haven't been there, but I'm certain. And they're always fusing together the state of Israel together with the Holocaust suffering. Like this is the response to the Holocaust suffering, that we have to have a state. And if you dare oppose the state of Israel, in other words, you're joining the Nazis. How they have the audacity, in Hebrew we say the chutzpah, the nerve, that they speak about the Holocaust when they should be hiding in holes because of embarrassment of what their involvement was in the Holocaust. There's a book called 51 Documents from Lenny Brenner, also lives in New York, and I know him. He did some service for Naturei Karta. He went to travel to Syria different years and years ago. He wrote a book of 51 Documents where Eichmann himself admitted in a three-series article in Life magazine. Life magazine was a very respectable newspaper, a magazine, and they had a three-series article where they interviewed Eichmann in Nuremberg when he was in prison. And he has the tapes of it. And he said, "Yes, I worked with the Zionists, and in order that they should silence the Jews, that they shouldn't know that they're going to be let to gas chambers, he worked with them because they were very rich and leaders of communities. I worked with them and I promised them that we'll be able to have like 10,000 Jews or 20,000, in other words, were Zionists, that they should be able to leave, and on the condition that they'll see that the rest of Jews should not know what's happening to them, and they should lead them like sheep to slaughter." And this was the agreement. And you know who presided over his trial, Eichmann? Somebody, Levi or Levine. This Levi Levine knew. This guy was the same judge who judged the people who were involved in this crime of the Hungarian Jews that the Zionists worked together, and he was by the Eichmann trials. So the question is, if he knew what the Zionists did, why didn't he bring any of the Zionists for trial in Nuremberg? Anyway, the truth is, all these are side issues. Our opposition is not because of crimes of past of what the Zionists did. Our opposition to Zionism is because they're continually, every minute of its existence, they're rebelling against God. How are they rebelling against God? One way is, of course, what you know. They're destroying the lives continually. Not they destroyed in 1948 the lives of the Palestinian people. Every day of its existence, people are suffering. People can't return to their homes. The people are dying because they're lacking medical attention in Gaza, in Palestine, in refugee camps around the world. And they're creating a turmoil around the world. God's name is peace. Shalom. Salam. God's attribute is peace. The Jews lived for hundreds and hundreds of years in every Muslim country. We live together. We're humanity that has to live together, required by God and peace. And these Zionists are the greatest factory of exacerbating hate, anti-Semitism, a rift driven between Jews and Muslims, and in Western civilization they're creating havoc and hate because of mistrust. I mean, the many different things that there's a hate for for other people that are around the world in the Middle East. They don't trust others because of the blind support of Israel. It's clear because of that. So they look at other people like, you're false. You're not truthful in your actions. Here you say human rights activists, and here you're ignoring what's happening to Palestinian people. Of course, these people who are ignoring what's happening to Palestinian, many of them, the majority, is because their minds have been twisted. They've been fooled into believing this false fact that it's a religious issue. Again, when Gaza was attacked, or when the Mavi Marmara ship was attacked, what was the media response in CNN and on Fox? All these things. What did you see here? You saw that they showed that they were armed. The people in the Mavi Marmara, they showed arms. I don't know if you noticed what the arms were. Forks. You know, you could stab somebody with a fork. I don't know if you know, but they showed they had forks. They had they had terrible things. You know, if you take soap and you pour it in somebody's eyes, it hurts a lot. They had soap on the ship. They had different things on there. They were armed. They wanted to destroy the people, and they were villains and so forth. It's very easy if you know there's people. There's a good business called public relations, PR firms. And the better you're efficient at being a good PR firm, the more you charge. What does a public relations firm do? What do you need a public relations? As a general rule, I mean, you can be somebody who's the greatest criminal, and you pay, and we know I'm not going to get into cases, but for instance, even when they attacked Iraq, everyone afterwards, there was the war and the attack on Iraq, Kuwait paid a fortune to get the best public relations firm, that they should stand in front of Congress and so forth and present that America should be willing to go and die to go into Kuwait and fight. I'm not going into who was right and who's wrong. I'm not getting it, but they hired a public relations firm. If you don't hire a public relations firm, then the other people hire it, then people will be against you. That's the way it works. The fact is, Israel pays for the most expensive public relations firms in the world, in the United States at least. We know they pay a fortune for it, but it's a very paying investment. So what they're doing is they're creating this terrible vilification of the people of Gaza and the people of Palestine. These people are suffering, and yet they're the big villains. When they attacked Gaza, as we've said, they vilify these people. When Gaza, look what they were. The people who are living in squalor in this terrible open air prison, the greatest prison on the world. And why? Not because they want to kill Jews. They simply want their right to live. They want their freedom. And we support that. Jews around the world who are true to Judaism from day one, before Arab countries supported it, before, like I was showing, we have pictures of people in 1924, and before, the Jews who are true to Judaism, we had our antennas up because we've suffered from other false, Jews and false Jewish prophets and false, that came to us, constantly, trying to eradicate Judaism, reform Judaism, conservative Judaism, people coming to rip out the hearts of Jews from their religion. So when Zionism came, the antennas and the rabbis around the world warned us, these people are evil. We didn't need much to know the evil because they didn't hide that they were against God. Theodor Herzl had one son. His name was Hans, and he wrote in the newspaper, "I am not circumcising my son." He wrote a newspaper. He never did. You can ask any Zionist. They will never refute it. He had one son, and other Jews gave their lives in Russia. We knew. I remember. I'm in my 50s. God, you give me long years. I remember when I was in the youth that people were living in Russia, in USSR. And people went to Siberia. People who made a copy of the Bible or something, and they were caught, were either murdered or sent to Siberia. I have friends who are living today in the United States. People, and they were Russian generals who took they took a chance on their lives. Their whole life could have been ruined. They could have been murdered, and they secretly circumcised their children. They were Russian generals. They were under the microscope, and that they took the chance. Theodor Herzl, whom nobody was stopping him from circumcising. He was proud to write he's not circumcising his son. And he wrote, Jews gave them lives on the Inquisition. They were burnt that they shouldn't, because they didn't want to accept Christianity, because they wanted to be Jews, like they promised God. They made a covenant on Mount Sinai. And yet, Theodor Herzl writes, a way to solve anti-Semitism, as I mentioned last time, is that all Jews convert to Christianity. The appointment should be made with the head priest, a mass conversion of all the Jews of Austria to Catholicism. It should be done on Sunday with music and pride, publicly, and on and on. These people were the heads of Zionism. And these are the ones who are saying, we have to have a Jewish state. And they wave the Bible and say, the Arabs are stealing the land that God gave us. The same mouth who wrote in papers, "I'm not circumcising my son," comes all of a sudden and waves the Bible. Hey, it's my land. How dare you take the land? God gave it to me. It's unbelievable, the hypocrisy, the contradictions that lie here. The Arabs want to kill us. Go for yourself. I invite anybody to go. I don't have to let you go. I'm sure you want to go to Iraq. I was in Egypt a few months ago. There's synagogues, beautiful, big synagogues, openly synagogues that you can see. Jews live there. They flourish. So how could you call these people the enemies of Jews? And everybody knows, even by the Second World War, Jews ran to Turkey and so forth. Jews, and so this is not a religious conflict, and it's so, anybody just has to scratch the surface instead of just turning on CNN or all these other, and hearing, the Arabs hate the Jews, and then these terrible people of Gaza, these people who are professional on this, and they show you how in one sentence, when they're talking about the Israeli soldiers, they said, "Oh, they died, and a child, it's terrible. It's a terrible tragedy. This child was killed, and he's in the hospital. This and that." And then they said, they shot a missile into the end. 75 terrorists were killed. There was a couple of kids there who died, and a couple of this and a couple of that. And you don't hear about it the next day, and it's all over. If you do hear anything about it. It's unbelievable, the falsification and the twisting, of everything, of the facts. And this is in the hearts of people. So, and I don't want to keep on going on and on. I've showed you when I was here 2 days ago that by the people who are true to Jews get beaten constantly. They're constantly beaten. They're oppressed. They're, because they refuse to support the state of Israel. You don't know, their lives is a constant life of suffering. Many of the Jews there, because they don't, you have here medical insurance. It's a whole issue with Obama, with medical insurance. These Jews could have insurance. They just have to sign the name on the bottom line, and they would be covered with insurance and with medical insurance, and on and on and on. And these Jews, hundreds of thousands of Jews, they refuse just to sign their name, so they have to pay for hospitalization, and they're vilified. They say, "How? Look at you! And we don't have family planning, so we have large families, and they have to pay for medicine. We have a special organization called Hatzolah. Hatzolah means to save. It was created by Rabbi Teitelbaum of Blessed Mary, who was the chief rabbi of Palestine." But there's always, I like to say that there's two types of chief rabbis. Israel has a rabbinate, a chief rabbi, which is a farce, just like they use the Star of David. It's only so that you look religious. And whenever they have to destroy an Arab village, they have the rabbi writes his name on the bottom there. Whatever they have to do, their terrible crimes, or Jewish crimes against the Jewish people. An example I give, let's say when they want to dig up, they have to make a highway. So they want to make it through a cemetery. We're not allowed to dig up. It's holy by us. You don't dig up a cemetery. And in Egypt, made it called the Ring Road. They have a very famous, big highway called the Ring Road. And this had to go through a Jewish cemetery. I was there. You can go there. And what Egypt did was they made it specially on pillars. that it shouldn't destroy, it shouldn't, this Jewish cemetery, and they had rabbis, our rabbis went there to help them show how to build this cemetery, that it, this highway that they had to make, a bridge and a highway, that it shouldn't, and they went to great efforts and a fantastic amount of money that they shouldn't destroy the Jewish cemetery. The Zionists made extension number to the Highway 6, it's one of the, Kvush 6, it's called one of the, and they would destroy the cemetery. Jews stood there and were beaten, because they stood there and said, how could you do this? What are you doing? They didn't care. They destroyed. They beat the Jews mercilessly. And I could go on and on and on what they do to the Jewish people. This is what Zionism is. And it doesn't get shown in the media. It's unbelievable that they murdered Jews, they beat Jews, and it doesn't get shown in the media. This was done from the 1920s and so forth, on and on. It's like, you should know there's a tremendous difference between Judaism and Zionism. Okay, I have to, you want questions? I'm going to answer in 2-3 minutes with God's help. When you want to speak up for the people of Palestine, you don't have to have any guilt feelings, because it doesn't mean you're anti-Semitic. It doesn't mean you have anything. I don't have to tell you that. But when people look at you with this, you know, judgmentally, you know, that you're an anti-Semite, you say, listen, I know the facts. And you don't have to always answer for yourself, but the fact is that if anybody is the enemy of the Jews, both spiritually and physically, it's the Zionists. Spiritually, they're attempting, and unfortunately they've been successful to a large extent of uprooting the soul of Jews from their religion. Because in their school system and so forth, the youth, they're being brought up not even knowing what it means to be a Jew. They think it means a Jew to support Israel. They think that the Arabs are the enemies and we have to stand and protect ourselves against them. Judaism is one thing and one thing only. It is to serve God. And just mahu rachmav atatirachm. You have to be compassionate. You're not allowed to steal. You're not allowed to kill. The state of Israel is totally illegitimate. So the Zionists uproot the souls of the Jews. And physically, they're the greatest factory of exacerbating anti-Semitism. The greatest rivers of blood of both Muslims, Christians, Jews. This is all created by Zionism. It's an endless river of blood that they're creating. So when you want to come up and stand up for the Palestinian people and say, hey, this is illegitimate, it's a terrible crime, you're anti-Jewish, you should know, look at our site if you forget, go and study it, you will see that it's clear, it is totally contradictory, it's diametric opposites, there's Judaism, there is Zionism in the state of Israel, contradictory. But you should stand up there and say, this is against God, the people of Palestine are suffering, not for any godly cause. They're suffering for the cause of Satan. This is wrong. They should not be suffering. We have to save them. And like we say, the Soviet Union, it was etched in stone. It was the greatest world power. Overnight it disappeared. So we say, you have to pray to the Almighty. Almighty is powerful. These things look powerful, but it dims to nothing compared to the great strength of God. And we pray to the Almighty, because He's the one who can bring about anything and everything. That He should bring a speedy and total and peaceful, we hope, without any more suffering, the dismantlement of this illegitimate, evil entity called the State of Israel. Totally, it should be dismantled. And God could bring, just like the Soviet Union. And look at this, again, like I said, in South Africa, the apartheid, it wasn't by the politicians, it wasn't the UN, it was you, it was me, it was people who stood on the streets and kept on insisting for the world. You should know this is wrong. We must stop it. So we have to stand up and stubbornly insist to the politicians, you cannot support, you must stop this entity called the State of Israel, because it's a rebellion. They don't like to hear the words. They scoff at you, the rebellion against God. But it is a rebellion against God. It is illegitimate. People say it's against human rights. I call it against godliness. It should not exist. We must stand up for them, for the people of Gaza and Palestine. Do for them. Bring them help. We went to Gaza, thank God. It's, of course, just as a symbolic, because how much help could we possibly bring that with the colossal amount they need? We have to do for them. Let us stand up and let the world know this is not religion. It would help. Like I beg people, speak to your elders. Go and interview them with a tape recorder. Tell me the story, where you come from. You came from Iraq. You came from Pakistan, Afghanistan. Where did you come from? Just tell me if you had any Jewish people there. What was your life, your coexistence? The anecdotes, personally and communally. So it should be there that we should, and one day somebody with enough money you can meet, they should put it in newspapers. We should have the fact to refute the Zionist evil portrayal that this religion has, and put it in the papers. Let the world know this is nothing but religion. We want to live together. We have lived together. And with God's help, soon in our days, we will live together in harmony and grace. Give the Jews the opportunity to show our gratefulness for the Muslim and Arab people. I, as a representative of the Jewish community, again, I convey our total humiliation and sorrow and at the tragedy, the terrible what's happening to the people of Palestine. You should know around the world we are frustrated. It hurts us. We cry for the suffering of the people of Palestine. With God's help, it should end soon in our days, and we should be able to all, the day should come soon in our days when God will reveal His glory throughout the world, where all humanity will serve Him in harmony soon. Thank you. Yeah. First of all, I'm ready to stay. I'll stay longer afterwards because I'm the one who's responsible because I spoke too long. But I'll stay and answer if there's more questions with God's help. Have you considered asking a documentary to further your cause? If not, creating a documentary. This is a whole, I'm not going to get into lengthy things. Once again, if not, what do you feel is the most successful way of answering the Zionist? Countering the Zionist threat. Well, again, first thing is because I'm speaking to people who believe in God. The first and encompassing thing always is whenever we do anything, we have to pray to the Almighty and know that it's not our actions that accomplish anything. It's the Almighty. We have to do because the Almighty requires us to do, but it's the Almighty who accomplishes. So first we have to constantly pray, as I say, it should bring an end to this aberration, to this terrible crying for the state of Israel peacefully and speedily, soon, right away, and you know that without any more bloodshed and suffering. We should pray. If somebody said it's not possible that it could come about speedily and peacefully, because both speedily, look, it's so strong, and peacefully, it's not possible. I said, with prayer, there's a God. God is Almighty. You know, there's a very short little anecdote. Somebody was going on carrying a heavy package. It's a parable that we give in our teachings. A fellow was going to the parable, one of the Chofetz Chaim, I mentioned his name earlier, that he spoke against Zionism, a great rabbi. And he said, gives a parable that somebody was carrying a heavy pack on his shoulders and he was walking on the road. So I passed him in a wagon. He said, hey, can I give you a lift? So he said, yeah, certainly. So he went into the wagon, and the whole time he was carrying this heavy package on his lap. And the guy said, hey, put down the package. He said, look, I bothered you to take me, but the you know, this little package I'm not going to bother you to take also. He's like, you know, we have, God is great. Sometimes we think, oh, only the, you know, God's somebody sick and this and that, or whatever. Then it looks hopeless. Then we turn to God. In everything, that every moment of our daily life and everything, we have to turn to God. God, every second and everything that's happened is only through God, you know, compassion. So we have to constantly pray. That's first of all. But we have to, God requires of us to, you know, to not to look away, you know, when people are being suffering and so forth, and we have to help. So if you are strong, you're confident by yourself that you know that it's not anti-Semitism and so forth, that you're not against religion, which you know and you can understand, then don't speak wildly. Don't speak you know, like that it looks like you're a fanatic, if you know what I mean. Be calm, because they're going to attack you. The Zionists attack constantly. And so then you answer, so then people look on the side and say, oh, he's a fanatic. Clearly, lucidly, show that this is a crime that's being done, and stubbly, on and on and on. Let us get the world to stop, you know, to stop this terrible crime what Zionism is doing to the people of Gaza. Do whatever. Bringing them food, bringing them, you know, on and on and on. There's things that we have to look. And ask God to show us what we can do. Can you please give us the verse in Torah that says Jews have no right to own any land? Oh, that's a very good question. It's in Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs, I don't know, sometimes it has in English a different name, but the exact translation is Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs. It's from King Solomon. It's considered by us the highest prophecy. It's written in a parable of a love from one human to another and so forth. But in the translation, the rabbis explained, it's the love of God to us and so forth. So it explains it, it says, keeps us thinking about my love and my uncle, and it's very long. So it says, God is saying, I've put you on the oath, the daughters of Jerusalem, with the oak and the deer of the field, if you will try to awaken my ahava, means love, achtechot. Three times it's the same verse, in the second chapter, in the fourth, it says, God is telling the Jewish people, do not try to awaken my love. And it's a parable, because it just says, the daughters of Jerusalem, do not awaken my love prematurely. And that is a prophecy of King Solomon and the Talmud. It's a whole issue what the Talmud, because people think that the Talmud is something that's a terribly radical, bad thing. Anybody who's a religious Jew, he has the written law, that's the five books of Moses and the prophecies, and the Talmud. We observe the Talmud. And I'm not embarrassed to say it. People vilify the Talmud. Obviously, the Sharia and the Quran is vilified by, there's this thing. And the Talmud is massive. It's volumes. It constantly rebukes the Jewish people. Very sharp rebuke. And there's other rebuking of other people, but it's very minuscule compared to the way it rebukes the Jewish people. And a lot of it is not clear, and this and that. People don't, you can't take it out of context. But anyway, the Talmud explains in Ksubos. Ksubos is the marriage contract. It's one volume. It's just about marriage contract between a man and a woman. It's called Ksubos, and that's page 111. And it explains this prophecy of King Solomon. Page 111 explains this prophecy that says three times, because we were put under three oaths of God. One, that we're not allowed to return en masse to the Holy Land, that means in large numbers, since the destruction of the temple. Secondly, we're not to rebel against any nation. Thirdly, we're not to try to bring the end of exile in any manner. We're not to rebel against any nation. We have to be loyal citizens in every country we're residing. This is clearly, it was upheld for 2,000 years. Jews had times that they were very rich, and there was a rich communities. It was called the Golden Age of Judaism. They could have easily bought land. And they went to the rabbis, they said, should we buy land? There were responses. The rabbi said, no, no, no. God sees the suffering. When the time will come, he'll make a miraculous change. The whole world will recognize God. And this is what Jews believe and hope for. There will come a day, not with a gun, never a state of Israel. There's a day that all humanity will recognize God, and all the nations will go up and serve God. That's the Jewish belief. And if I have to bring it with a gun, then it's baloney. If it will happen, this miracle, then you don't have to accept my prophecy the way we see. But you'll see, we believe that it will happen, and take it or leave it. We believe that this is what will happen. So this is just another, just a little the thing that's very important to know. I mean, because people always ask me about this. They say, Jews hold that there's certain Christians or whatever, maybe all, I don't know. They said everybody else is going to go to hell if you're not a Christian or something like that. And Jewish religion is, we discourage people from becoming Jews. I'll explain the reason. The fact is, we believe that God created the world and everybody, and everybody has to uphold the seven commandments of Noah. That means to believe that God gave Moses the Torah. The Torah says that you have to believe in one God, not to serve idol worship, not to kill, not to steal, not to commit adultery, and not to eat from an animal while it's still alive, and to have a court system. If you uphold these mitzvahs, these commandments, then you will inherit the world to come. And it says this in our law books, from Maimonides, it's very clear, nobody refutes it. So you don't have to be Jewish to serve God in no manner whatsoever. Therefore, we discourage anybody from becoming Jewish, because if you become Jewish, then means that you accept the laws of Judaism, then you have to keep 613 commandments. And if you don't keep them, then you're a sinner. If I don't keep the Sabbath, if I would have come here in a car or speak in a microphone and say any of the multitudes of sins, if I would not keep the kosher properly and all these things, then I would be a sinner. So even if I don't keep one commandment, God forbid, I'm a sinner. So if you're involved the whole day with commandments, so, and if somebody can accept Judaism, you can't say the next day, I changed my mind. If you are born from a Jewish mother, or you converted to Judaism, which anybody can convert if they want to, at the end, nobody can stop, it doesn't belong to anybody, It doesn't belong to anybody to stop them. You know, the Jewish people accepted Judaism, and anybody could accept it if they want. But if they do accept it, and you come a minute later after you accept it, you meant it truthfully. You went through the process, and you meant it truthfully. A minute later, you change your mind, too late. The whole life, we consider that person a sinner if he changes his mind. So we try to discourage, because the human nature is, I'll give an example, is you like to do exercise. And you buy yourself an expensive treadmill. And you buy it, and for the first week, you use it, and the second week, you look at it, and the third week it collects dust, and that's what happens. Because a person is a human being from flesh and blood. So, you know, like you, if something's exotic, interesting, but after a while you may lose interest, or it may be too hard. So we that's why we discourage people from becoming Jews. But anyway, you don't have to be Jewish to serve God. It's important because it's always asked of us this, many times about this concept.
Can you please give the chapter number and page number for the verse?
It's in the Ketubot. You can look up there. It brings the prophecy of King Solomon. It's page 111. 111. In Ketubot. The Talmud. He explains it. And it brings the verse from Shir HaShirim in there.
And what's the volume number of Talmud?
The Ketubot. Ketubot. It does, it goes, Ketubot, it has names, the volumes. The Ketubot. And it's page 111.
Have you spent it?
Ketubot is K-E-S-U... B-O-T-H, I believe they spell it in English, and you can't miss it. And there they have the verses of King, because it's few verses that are brought from Shir HaShirim. And then, have you considered asking? Oh, that we did that already. In your eyes, what is the major factor that will bring about the downfall of Israel? The major factor is because it's rebelling against God. In the Torah it says, if you will rebel against God, why are you going against the words of God? It will not be successful. It's a verse. You can't go against God and think it will be successful. Yes, it may be good for one day. Rabbi Beck, he should have long and healthy years as well, senior rabbi, he says, somebody was the king decreed somebody to be hanged. And they put him in the wagon, he's being led to be hanged. And he goes and he copies an hour, 2 hours. He says, hey, I wasn't hanged yet. So I'm not going to be hanged. He goes an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. He's still not hanged. Well, forget about it. He's not going to be hanged. But he's coming closer and closer and closer. You know, that's the fact. But he's not thinking right. Right? The fact of the matter is that every day, you know, as Rabbi Beck and many rabbis said, Rabbi Teitelbaum of Blessed Mary, who was the chief rabbi of Palestine and moved to the United States afterwards, created Kiryas Joel, a very holy man, really the leader of anti-Zionism after World War II. He said, if my hair raises when I think of what this result of this rebellion against God is, who knows what's going to come of it, how many people dying and suffering. So I'm just saying, you know, because it's a rebellion against God, even if it would be, they're going to work out a system, you know, that they'll be able to bring some type of a peace. As long as it exists, it's a danger because it's rebelling against God. But the question is, in physical terminology, you know, if you break it down to material reasons, what will bring about the downfall of Israel? Of course, it will be when people, the world, will become disenchanted and realize, awaken to the fact that it's a totally evil concept. And that will most probably when the interests of the arms, and the oil, whatever groups, when they decide that they had enough of it, you know, it won't be in their interest, and it's possible then. But we don't know. All these things, like I said, I always say, I'm not smart, I'm not a prophet, I'm simply giving over a message, you know, of what the Torah is. I can't say prophecy, I don't know a lot, of, you know, and I, so I can't, you know, prophesize or say anything like that. But we know that every day it could come about, this end of Israel. And you never know, who would have known last year that all the Arab countries, that there was going to be a change, this radical change? Who would have believed it? Who would have thought of, would have dreamed of it? So, you know, I can't say these things. We call them, like a saying in our, it's called mikvah shmuz. Mikvah shmuz means people get together in the when they're preparing to pray, whatever they like at the special water and everything, and they stand there because it's warm, and they're preparing. And they make decisions of the world, and everybody comes up with this brilliant, you know, theories and everything. But really, it's just opinions, people's opinions. I don't know. One thing we know: whether they're strong or they're weak, the state of Israel, whether it's Rabin or Netanyahu or whatever it is, people say which of the leaders is better. None of them is good. Because the whole existence of the state of Israel is evil. It's like I said, which was a better leader of mafia, this guy or that guy? It's illegal, the existence. Why is the voice of Jewish people like you not loud enough? Unfortunately, first of all, I always, like I show, the true religious, thank God, there's hundreds of thousands, and you don't see it because the press is intimidated. It's AIPAC that attacks any politician that dares to speak up against them. And this is a fact. You can see people fear the politician to dare to look like he sympathizes with Palestinians, you know? And if he does, it's, yeah, I sympathize with that they should also have their rights, but not, God forbid, I'm not against Israel. And he has to 10 times make sure that it's clear that he's not against, you know, Israel. So, and the newspapers are the same thing. I've had tens of times, he asked about a documentary. We've had BBC. I've made hours and hours with BBC, with New York Times, with, I can go through every major news outlet. And a lot of times, the people who make the doc, who are interviewing, they're seriously, they want to make the article, but it gets killed because they can't print it, because the paper's not going to close itself down because they want to write the story about Palestine. And they're under a tremendous pressure. It's called Media Watch that the Zionists have. So, but there's really tens and hundreds of thousands of Jews that can show you the pictures of Jews demonstrating. There would be hundreds and hundreds of thousands more if it wouldn't be that fear. The Zionists, more than they attack the Palestinians, they know they're easy to attack the Jew. Because you come to your mosque and you say, those Zionists, right? But and people accept you here because you everybody understands what the Zionists, what they are, and you don't understand it. But in the Jewish people, so they it's confusing. There's some, you know, Jewish owners, Jewish stores, and this of stores and of businesses that some rich organizations that give money for a school. They donate money. And mostly, the more the religious, the poorer they are, because they put their money into education and so on. That's a fact of life. The less religious become doctors and lawyers, and they're the ones, at the end of the day, they'll donate $1 million for this organization. And all they do is, so the Zionists, when they see that I want to speak in Columbia University or Yale University, so they call up the board and they have somebody, either he's a Zionist or a Jewish Zionist or evangelist, a Christian Zionist, and the board calls up the professor and they say, you know, I hear you invited a Jew, and this guy's thinking he needs tenure in the university, and he starts shaking in his pants, you know, he doesn't know what's going to happen to him tomorrow. They put a tremendous pressure. So there's many, and there's the fact, you've seen, I don't know, the demonstration, they come, the people take pictures, the Zionists take pictures about, after every large demonstration, Jewish demonstration, invariably Jews lose their jobs. They lose their jobs because they take pictures, they study them, and then they go to a factory or some big supermarket and they say, oh, you're buying from this and this company. I want you to know that we're going to boycott your store. We're not going to deal with your store, some big business, because you're dealing with this and this company. So what's wrong with this and this company? They have a worker there that I saw yesterday standing outside and demonstrating against the, he's a traitor against the Jews. How could you deal with this company? They're tremendously efficient. They go down the chain. So Jews suffer a lot under this, so people are afraid to speak up. They're physically attacked and many other ways. So it's part of the sad thing of Zionism. Like I said, it's the works of Satan. They're efficient, unfortunately. What is our role as a Muslim community to help and support your blessed effort? However, being a Muslim is weakening our support because Western world considers us an enemy of the Jews. Like I said, it's frustrating, but you just have to pray to God to enlighten us what to do. Stand up and be careful. Don't you call it the Jewish state. You know that Begin, when they made the Oslo Accords, others, I think Camp David, they insisted that they write not the state of Israel, a Zionist state, they insisted they write the Jewish state. They love to use the word the Jewish state, that the connotations meaning that it's, you know, it's religious, it has to do with, they attack the Jews. They didn't attack the, you know, they attacked the Jews, they attacked the Jewish state, you know, the Jewish, it should be a Zionist. Be careful, it's not the Jews, don't think it's very hard, because it unfortunately, it's Jews, but it's a state of Israel, it's the Zionist state. Be careful to clarify that your problem is not with Judaism or the Jews, and that you're not looking for Jewish bloodshed, you're looking for the ending of the state of Israel that has stolen land and body from the Palestinian people. We want the end of the state of Israel and Zionism, not the Jews. Because although you don't mean the Jews, and I myself, you say the state of Israel, they call it the Jewish state. Be careful, because they're very easy. They're looking to attack you. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I really thank all of you.
loud salawat for the honorable guest.
Allahumma salam.